Welcome to the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
This segment brought to you by Coghill Golf and Country Club, a pure golf experience. Tyler Aki and Mike Gilligan with you. We talk golf with you every single Saturday. If you're just joining us, we were on a little bit early today as we will be off a little early for White Sox baseball. You miss anything, check it out on the podcast on the ESPN Chicago app or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll get to our countdown to Augusta in just a little bit. It's a good one today. It is all about players who have won green jackets before that are participating in this year's event, as well as we get you closer and closer to the opening Thursday of the Masters. But you asked me about shoes right before the break, and I did want to bring this to your attention. I have a pair of FootJoy shoes. I don't know like the name or like the model or whatever they are, but they are amazing. They're extremely waterproof. Like, I don't even really have to worry about the wet socks as much anymore because they are that good. But I have a story behind them because I forgot to break them in.
Oh.
And the first rounds I played in them were at Pinehurst.
Oh. So, and you had to walk.
So we were walking. We walked 2 and 4 when we were there. And we played. I'm trying to remember. The first day we played was 2 and 3. And I remember walking 2, and it got a little, we had a little bit of rain too.
The worst.
And we're walking 2, and I can feel the blisters coming on. I'm like, oh no, this is a disaster. And so we get there, and I take them off after our round at 2, and I just see a nasty blister forming on my toe, and on a couple of my toes, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be a pain for the rest of the trip. And then, so I'm working with that. 3 is a struggle. I'm not liking it. 4 the next day was probably the worst of them all. I had my worst round at 4 the next day. And then the other thing, too, we were doing is we were playing the Cradle, which is their small little 9-hole, like, 50-yard. It's a ton of fun.
So fun.
But you play barefoot.
Yeah.
There. And so I'm playing barefoot, which was actually...
Probably felt good.
It was a little more soothing than, especially with the grass that they had there. So that was actually a little more of a soothing and more of a remedy to the whole thing. But then the last day we're playing 8, and I'm like, oh, my feet are going to be killing me today. And I woke up, and like the blisters had hardened to the point where no stinging, no nothing. And it felt great. And I just remember, if you got a new pair of shoes, just break them in. It's the one thing. My girlfriend just got a new pair of shoes, and I said, all right, before we play, just make sure to break those shoes in, or otherwise you're going to hate your life for the next 2 days after because of the blisters you're going to be dealing with.
Well, no doubt. And I think first and foremost, it sounds like you had rainproof shoes. Mm-hmm. So that's going to make the break-in a little bit more unique and different because your feet don't get to breathe quite like they normally would a different type of shoe. So and then you throw a little humid conditions, little Pinehurst in there, and boy, you're also navigating some ground that's not necessarily flat. But for that reason, that's why you want to look for shoes that are sturdy, well-designed soles that can offer you the grip and traction. Because let's face it, this is the one item that we can buy that secures us to the earth.
Yeah.
So as a former hockey player, I never scrimped on skates. And with baseball and like my son, I always got him the best set of spikes that he could get for his feet. But then I get him 2 pairs because of all the events that he would play in tournaments, going back to wet feet and tired feet, he could flip shoes in and out between games and because he was also a pitcher. So to go back on the mound like in a second game and have dry shoes was an advantage for him. So the same holds true when I look at my golf shoes. I've got about 6 pairs. Some of them are for fashion, but they all fit me. And that's the most important thing. As much as I would love to buy a certain FootJoy shoe that I have my eye on, mm-hmm. and there is a Nike shoe that I absolutely love, they don't fit me.
Mm-hmm.
And I try.
Yeah.
Because I want that shoe.
Yeah.
But I realize I have to go to what fits my foot because of the various injuries that I've had and the type of width that I have, you know, which is a medium. But at the same time, I have to have a shoe that best performs for me, and that is Adidas golf shoes. So I use
a lot of people I know love that. You said Adidas?
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of people I know, our buddy James Colgan, he's been a huge advocate of the Adidas golf shoes. He loves them.
I absolutely love them. And I can buy them online because they fit every time mm-hmm. the same way.
Yeah.
And
so what do you like about them?
The comfort, the performance, and just the overall cushion that I get because, again, I love to walk. And so they may not be as dressy looking as some of the FootJoys that they offer, but for performance, for the lightweight that they are. Now, they're not the lightest weight golf shoe, but it is sturdy, and I feel like I am anchored to the ground. And, you know, with, you know, my swing speed's about 110, 112 with the driver. So I'm not holding much back. So I need to be prominently secured to the earth. Yeah. And it allows me to maintain better balance. And see, for me, and I would advise anyone for shopping for shoes, when you are in the PGA Superstore, go down and try hitting a few shots in them. And see, that's
the nice thing about the superstores is that they have the little simulators and hitting bays in them. So you can, like, whatever you can test it out. Yeah.
And more specifically, you might walk a few aisles here and there, but go try and see what it feels like when you are going through the shot and finishing, you know, making that transition, that weight transition. And does that feel like it should? And does it feel good? Because if it does, buy them. But if it doesn't, I don't care how good they look.
Yeah.
If they're going to give you a blister and ultimately give you problems, guess what? You're not going to wear them. That's just what happens. And I've got a couple of pairs that are brand new that I had to give to other people that I can prove that. I decided that I wanted to have feet that weren't so sore and blistered and all the rest of it. But you bring up a good point. Do break them in before. And how you can break them in is simply just go hit balls in them and practice chipping and putting and walk around a little bit there, then do it again, then do it again, and then maybe go play 9 holes.
Yeah.
And then put in 18 holes.
Right.
So
maybe don't do it before you go on a golf trip with your buddies.
Exactly. That's a big bozo. Mm-hmm. No. You don't buy a brand new set of shoes and take them out of the box, put them in the suitcase, and head to Arizona thinking I'm all good.
Yeah.
I mean, unless they're custom made for you.
Right. And even then, you still probably want to break them in. But I was kicking myself because it made playing at Pinehurst, number 2 was fine, but number 4 was the one where I was like, oh, I loved that course so much.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just like, I wish my feet weren't killing me right now.
And for that reason, in my golf bag, if you get a blister, you cut yourself, you do anything, I have got a first aid kit that is second to none. And what I do when I get that blister, I've got special tape. I'll just put a piece of tape, and I've got bandages that are big enough. And so I can make a repair midway through my round to save my feet if I have to. And the same goes with my hands. Because if you do hit a lot of balls early in the season, calluses, blisters, and all of that.
Sometimes you don't even realize, but like there's a hole developing on your glove, and then you'll look at your hand on, or you'll put it on 6 and be like, oh,
yep.
Look what's forming there. Something's peeking.
Exactly what happened to me yesterday. So new glove today.
Yep. 312-332-3776. If you want to join us on any of the apparel talk, we will get to our countdown to Augusta in a little bit. Also, we've got a little recap as well of Full Swing, all that with the Road to All Roads Lead to Rome episodes, part 1 and part 2, as they got ready for the Ryder Cup. And we're giving away another one of those Taste of the Masters kits as well. So be on the listen for that. We'll do that. Some Masters trivia for you coming up at 9:35. You better bring your A game because Mike had a good one last week. It took a couple people before we finally got our answer. We'll also give away a few Masters journals as well. And then, of course, we've got the Houston Open going on right now.
Sure do.
And it has been a lot of big names swinging at the top of that leaderboard. So we will get you all the latest on what is going on the PGA Tour as well. This is the CDGA Golf Show. This segment brought to you by Cog Hill Golf and Country Club, home of 42 practice bays with top tracer technology. When we come back, we will get to that countdown to Augusta featuring all of the golfers participating that have already won a green jacket. That's coming up next on the CDGA Golf Show.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.
This segment brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin. This is the CDGA Golf Show. We're with you every single Saturday throughout the golf season, usually on from 9 to 11 a.m. Today, 8:30 to 10:30, as we segue you into White Sox baseball here, starting with White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. Don't forget, you can take us on the go as well. With that ESPN Chicago app, take that and download that ESPN Chicago app on your app store so you can bring us wherever you are going. Let's get into our countdown to Augusta. We've been doing this as we get you ready for the start of the Masters.
The birds are chirping. The azaleas are in full bloom. And the green jacket is perfectly tailored.
We look forward to you wearing the green jacket at Augusta National for many years to come.
It's the countdown to Augusta on the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000.
That's right. It is the countdown to Augusta. We are now just a couple of weeks away, about less than 2 weeks now, from the start of the Masters as they'll tee it up down at Augusta National. Now, as we take a look at today's batch of golfers that we're going to be previewing, it is going to be the players that have already won green jackets before, and there's 17 of them in the field. Now, there's a lot of legacy names in there as well. Of course, you win the Masters, you're in for life. Guys like Freddie Couples, guys like Charles Schwartzel, Vijay Singh, they'll all be teeing it up, Mike Weir. But there's also some very prominent names, including the defending champion who has gone through a major overhaul in his career since he last won at Augusta about a year ago, and that is Jon Rahm, the defending champion. His odds right now currently at 7.5 to 1, and he is the favorite once again to put the green jacket on. And I look at Jon Rahm and what he did last year, holding off Brooks Koepka on that final day, and it was really impressive. But now that he's played a little bit of a different schedule heading in, because remember the thing with Rahm last year, he had all the momentum in the world going into Augusta. I don't think you can say the same because of the fact that he's on LIV and he's working with a little bit of a different schedule, playing in different sorts of events, as opposed to your I mean, even he's playing a different number of rounds.
Exactly.
Per tournament. I mean, he's going to be going from 3 to 4, so it's going to be his first 4-round tournament since he was on the PGA Tour last year.
Yeah, and I think the 4 rounds won't bother him as much. It's just overall the number of rounds that he's played competitively is really down. He's just not playing as much. And so can a guy like him win under this type of, you know, schedule and what I'll just say, not as consistent a schedule that he had, as you alluded to, last year. Because remember, last year, he earned, before May 1st, just shy of $15 million. Yeah. I mean, so you're not doing that finishing 18th. He was on fire and on a roll. He had this thing called momentum going in a big, big way. And so, you know, will he be able to find that by not playing consistently? He's being now consistently inconsistent. So it's going to be new. But for him, I know in terms of some of the press conferences that I heard when he was playing in the events at LIV, he misses defending. He has missed it. It's the one thing he regrets. So for him, coming back to Augusta is a really, really big deal because I think he wants to show the world I'm still a formidable player and potentially in the discussion of the best player in the on the planet.
Yeah, I look at Jon Rahm. You're right. This is kind of his reintroduction because once you go to live, whether it's fair or not, you kind of disappear off of the golf radar. You can win on live, and that's all well and good, but no one really acknowledges it. No one really notices it unless you go out and have some sort of historic round. And I look at Jon Rahm. This is his reintroduction. I felt the same way about Brooks last year. It was his reintroduction to the golf world, and he took it by storm last year, finishing runner-up to Jon Rahm.
And you don't think Jon Rahm was paying attention? I know he's going to try to do exactly what Brooks was doing, and Brooks is going to try to say that that was no fluke. So I'll pose this question to you. Is it going to be a good thing if we see the LIV guys do what they did last year?
So remember last year it was Brooks and runner-up, and then it was it Phil and Patrick Reed tied for third?
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
That's right.
All of them were in the top five. Yeah.
And then they went to the PGA Championship, and obviously Brooks won there, and you still had Bryson DeChambeau and Phil Mickelson. There was so much LIV talk.
Yeah.
And I think that actually proved to everybody that these guys aren't going away, and they're still really, really good. And so I have a feeling the class of guys led by Joaquin Niemann, of all people, mm-hmm. is trying to go make a big statement in Augusta.
It's what they do. I mean, we saw a LIV guy win a major last year with Brooks, and it's kind of what they've done. Right. And I think you think about the schedule that these guys play, there's less tax on their body. They're feeling fresher. They're looking healthier. They're playing some of their best golf. And we've seen, and last year was the first iteration of where we kind of saw the mixing of the two entities. And it was great theater. CBS had to have loved the eyeballs that were on it there down the stretch. You had a powerful leaderboard, even though they may not have shown everybody, which was a big point of contention last year. But the Brooks versus Rahm drama down the stretch, and ultimately it's Rahm that holds off Brooks Koepka, but it was fantastic theater, and I think all of the golf world was happy to see that rivalry on the course play out exactly how you would have wanted it to.
And just think about this. If what occurred last year happens again this year, LIV finished first, second, and third at the Masters.
Yeah, that's true.
There was no PGA Tour
top four spots,
because
yeah.
It was Rahm mm-hmm. for the good guys, Brooks for the bad guys.
Right.
And that was sort of the big fight down the wire. But now, it's both are LIV, right?
Yeah.
So that's what's really interesting, especially with these two guys, and I think I've alluded to it before. But should Brooks win and then Rahm wins the PGA, those two LIV players are going for their personal Grand Slams when they both arrive for the Open.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that something? And
yeah.
So here again, LIV could be a big newsworthy piece of this season if a couple of things go Brooks and Jon Rahm's way this year.
Yeah. Just kind of going down through the order of the odds here. So I mentioned Rahm the favorite at 7.5 to 1. Right behind him is Scottie Scheffler, who's been playing some of the best golf of his career. Feels like he's starting to figure out the putter. He's 5 under right now at the Houston Open. He's tied for fourth, trailing Tony Finau, who's at 9 under right now. But Scottie Scheffler, I mean, both you and I were really into the Victor Hovland story leading into the Masters. He has not been off to a good start so far for this season. Maybe he rebounds at the major, but Scottie Scheffler, he's got all the momentum in the world. It feels very Rahm-esque, in fact, compared to what Rahm was playing like, and even what Scottie was playing like when he won the Masters 2 years ago. It's got the same vibe to it, where he's playing some of his best golf. And the one thing is, he had the hole in his game with the putting. It's not totally figured out, but there's been a significant step taken in the right direction.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And Scottie really should be the odds-on favorite based
on
what's happening here. Mm-hmm. How do you not? But again, I guess he missed a 22-inch putt yesterday. For the first time, he didn't break 70 in, 22 or 28 rounds? because he missed a 22 incher.
It's nuts.
So that putting still has its issues at moments. But the good thing, and I said this last week, Scotty has won there. Scotty knows the place. Mm-hmm. So this is not, I've got to try to get myself comfortable on this golf course. He knows it. And I think he's going to be everything John Rahm and the rest of the cats can handle.
Yeah.
There is no doubt about it. And you know what's interesting when I look at the diaper dandies, as we call the guys that have won? Look at where Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods are. They have the same odds. The same odds. And it's just bizarre how they both came from two totally different ends of the earth to be at the same odds at this year's Masters.
Right.
I mean, a guy that nearly loses his leg and a guy that just a couple of years ago was winning a PGA at the ripe old age of 51. Mm-hmm. And you would think that guy would be among the top, right? But no, they're both at, I think 175-1 or something like that.
Yeah, you look at both of those guys and, like, Phil came close last year.
He finished third, but he's 175-1.
Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like a backdoor third. Like, he really came on strong on that final Sunday round. But, I mean, third is third. Like, it is.
Nothing
wrong with that.
And Phil, again, knows that golf course. So that's when you take a guy like him. If he gets hot, he knows that place like the back of his hand, and he's
that's exactly
still,
what happened on Sunday.
That's exactly
last year.
What happened, and he knows where to miss it, and he is among the very best, maybe ever to do it, is wedge player, getting up and down. He's still a master at that, and so he's a guy that I might just lay a couple of shingles on just for grins.
And this is the event he gets up for.
He does.
It really is. He gets up for this event. We saw it last year, and with Liv giving him less and less events over the course of the year, it just kind of furthers that notion of, all right, this is my time to shine. This is when all the eyeballs are going to be on me, because he knows there's not a lot of viewership on Liv Golf. Like, he knows what it is. And the way that he goes about these majors, it just seems like it's a different beast at times.
Exactly. And Tiger, 175-1. When was the last time you saw Tiger Woods playing at Augusta 175-1?
Yeah.
That was his backyard for so many years. But could he bring back the magic? Just could he put 4 days together for us? It would just be fun to see him finish in the top 10, in my own opinion.
Yeah. Looking at some of the other former winners, Jordan Spieth at 16-1. Now, Jordan won his first major at the Masters back in 2015, but... And that 2015 year was magical for him as well. But, like, you look at Jordan Spieth and just his wins since then, he just hasn't won a whole heck of a lot. He did win at the RBC last year, won at the RBC the year before as well. Actually, I take that back. He lost at the RBC last year in a playoff, won the RBC the year before, and it's just kind of been a little tough sledding for him since those first couple of years of his career.
No doubt. And another guy that you really want to keep an eye on, I think, is Hideki Matsuyama.
Yeah, 55-1 for Hideki there. And he's one of those guys. He's, what did he win, 3 years ago now?
Yep. But he was just in it in the Players' Championship.
Right, so. And that's usually a good indicator event,
you're
too.
You're darn right.
When you're playing well at the Players, it usually leads to some success at the Masters. Maybe not win it, but like you can finish top 10, top 5.
So what do you think about Dustin Johnson and Patrick Reed?
Those were the next two names I was going to get to. So you've got DJ at 40-1. You've got Patrick Reed at 55-1. DJ, he's complex.
He really
is. I mean, sometimes he goes out there and just puts on an absolute show. And sometimes day one doesn't go his way and he checks out.
Yeah.
And that's... It's why I would never lay a wager on DJ or even pick him in our CDGA fantasy golf pool, as well as because I'm willing to be wrong on DJ. And that's why I would stay away from him. Now, Patrick Reed, on the other hand, that's a guy who finished tied for third last year. And played really, really well in the Masters. He wasn't like Phil, where he just kind of snuck in the back door on the last day. He played pretty consistently throughout the tournament. So Patrick Reed is someone who I think may be worth putting an eye on, because I think he could maybe not win it, but he could make a little noise top 10.
Oh, absolutely. And I think there's another guy. Well, I think he was born with a chip on his shoulder, but yeah. He's from that part of the country. He loves the golf course. He's won there.
And he's a friend of the show.
And he is a friend
of the show. For
better or for worse. But yeah, both he and Taylor Gooch are.
Yeah.
But yes, I look at that guy as somebody to keep an eye on because he as well is coming over here with the idea that I've got my chance to show the world that I'm still relevant.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, when we come back, speaking of the Masters, we will do a little bit of Masters trivia. So line it up right now, 312-332-3776. First come, first serve for Masters trivia as we give away a taste of the Masters food kit. You'll want a piece of that when we come back. This segment has been brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin.
This is the CDGA Golf Show, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club, ESPN 1100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app.
This segment brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort. Experience a Michigan masterpiece. Time for a little taste of the Masters trivia. Still got plenty of open spots for you. 312-332-3776 if you want to line up and do a little trivia with us. Our first prize is we're giving away a taste of the Masters kit where you will get a fantastic lunch pack that is provided. And it's coming straight from Augusta National as well. So it is the large hosting kit. You will get 24 ounces of egg salad, 24 ounces of pimento cheese, 24 ounces of pork barbecue, 6 bags of plain potato chips, 6 bags of barbecue potato chips, 6 cookies, 6 packs of Georgia pecan caramel popcorn, and then you get a sleeve of 25 Masters branded souvenir cups, some Masters branded wax paper, some coasters, and other hosting kit materials as well. Noted, no bread or buns, so it's BYOB, bring your own bread.
Yes, sir. Boy, you're making me so hungry here at 9:35 in the morning.
But yeah, you will get one of those, and we will give them away every week until they sell out. So we gave away one last week. We'll give away another one this week. And then if you don't win that, though, hang on the line. We've got some Masters trivia as well for a Masters Journal, but if you want to get in, 312-332-3776. You're going to want to line up because it took us a couple callers last time as well to get the correct answer. All right, so we start with Ben. Ben, you are officially on the clock, and Mike has your question. You with us, Ben?
You there, Ben?
I'm doing well. How are you
doing? Okay, there you are, Ben.
Okay, we just want to make sure we got Ben in the house. So, Ben, last week we talked about one player who was a runner-up finisher to Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods the year that he won by 12 shots, and the answer was Tom Kite. But in that same Masters, 1997, when Tiger won by 12 shots, what was his opening nine on Thursday? What did he shoot on the first nine?
Oh, he was, I want to say 40.
Are we going with 40 or we thinking about it?
I'm going to go with 40.
You are a winner. He
All
was
right,
four
Ben.
Over, standing on the 10th tee, but finished 19 under par.
Look at Ben, right out of the
right
gate.
Right out of the gate. Well done, Ben.
Congratulations,
a Tiger
Ben.
Fan.
We will get you on hold. Are you a big Tiger fan?
I am.
See, I told you.
All right, we will get you on hold, and we will get your information. And you are the winner of the Taste of the Masters hosting kit. We'll get all your information there. But don't worry, we still got a little more trivia. We've got 3 Masters journals to give away as well.
We do.
All right, so we will continue down the trivia line here. We'll start with Bill. Bill, you there?
I'm here.
Okay, all right. Bill. Can you name the first left-handed Masters champion? The very first left-hander to ever put on the green coat.
Oh, let's go with Bob Charles.
That, unfortunately, is incorrect.
All good, Bill.
Bob Charles won the British Open. That was his only major.
Thanks for the call. If you want to line up as well, 312-332-3776. Next up, we've got UPS Woody. Woody, you with us?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Oh, go ahead.
All right. And do you know the answer to Mike's question?
I believe it is Mike Weir.
And you, my friend, are correct.
It is
the Canadian from North, Mike Weir. And he actually won the Masters before who you might normally think, Phil Mickelson. But Mike Weir won before Phil. Very well done, Ben.
We will get you on hold there. And Mike Weir, he will be participating in this year's match, Masters. You know his odds to win? Probably not as sure as when he won. They are 2,500 to 1 this year. So don't think he will, but you never know. You never know. We do see some wacky things at Augusta. All right, next up for a Masters Journal. And if you want to get in for a little trivia, 312-332-3776. Jerry, are you ready for your question from Mike?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
All right, Jerry. Kind of hopefully you were paying attention on the last call. But who is the only Masters champion to win in a sudden-death playoff with a bogey? And I'll give you three names to help you rein this in. Nick Faldo, Adam Scott, or Mike Weir?
Well, I know Mike Weir was the answer to the last question, and you asked if I was paying attention, but I doubt you're going to give me Mike Weir again. So I'm going to take Adam Scott.
Nope.
Oh, unfortunately, you tried to make it easy.
You talked yourself right out of that one.
Oh, man.
All good, Jerry. Thanks for participating.
Thank you,
yep.
Okay.
All right. We'll be doing some more Masters trivia along the way as well. And if you want to try to get in, we've got a few more journals to give away. 312-332-3776. If you want to go out and try to win a Masters journal, we will continue to take some of your calls for trivia as well. And we'll give out another Taste of the Masters hosting kit next week as well, as long as they're still available for you, as you can bring them into your office, what have you. It's a great thing. We've had them in our office before. I know you guys have had them in your office before. It's a great little thing for that Thursday, first Thursday or Friday of the Masters.
And something tells me I think you guys are going to have it again.
Ooh, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, that's just, I can feel it.
That's the beauty of working with the CDGA. 312-332-3776 if you want to join us. It's starting to feel real now. I feel like once the NCAA tournament is kind of in the latter stages, you start to get that feeling of, you know, this starts to feel really real, and that the Masters really is right around the corner, and we're going to get to our first major of the year.
Couldn't agree with you more. In fact, we were just talking about this yesterday.
Opening day, too. Once you get to, like, opening day and like, Sweet 16 NCAA tournament, it feels like you're right there.
Yeah, because once you get through the Elite Eight and we get to that Final Four come tomorrow, then all of a sudden, there's only a couple of games left. And then it's all about Augusta.
Yeah.
You know, we'll get through another home opener, on Monday with the Cubs. But believe it or not, we're coming up on it. And it's the best time of the year. This is where, it gives you that charge to get out and play for a lot of people who are, well, I'll say maybe not your diehards that'll be out there in February. Once they see that green grass and they start hearing those birds chirping and the azaleas in full bloom, it just makes you just want to get out and start playing yourself.
No doubt about it. All right, Mike wants to try his hand at a little bit of trivia as well. All right, Mike, you're with us. You ready for your question?
Yeah.
Okay, Mike, which player recorded the highest score on the par 3 12th hole at the Masters? Was it A, Tommy Nakajima, B, Tom Weisskopf, or C, Jordan Spieth?
Spieth.
That is incorrect.
Sorry, Mike.
All right.
You're really stumping people today,
I thought that was an easy one.
That is it Tommy Nakajima?
It's Tommy Nakajima, not the answer. It's Tom Weisskopf.
Oh, is it Tom Weisskopf? Okay.
It is.
And you said a 12?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. All right, so that is Masters Trivia. We tried to give away a couple Masters journals, but the Trivia Master was too good today. The house won.
Yeah, once again. The house won. Sometimes that happens.
Yep. 312-332-3776. What are you looking forward to most about this year's Masters?
For me?
Yeah.
I'm intrigued to see where the state of the state is with the tour and LIV, and to see the difference in the overall attitude and the fellowship and companionship that these guys will have now that we're a year removed from last year when it was the Hatfields and the McCoys. And so now, because June 6th happened, I'm curious as to some of the pairings and watching the players interact in that regard. But I would love to hopefully see that there is a bright light at the end of the tunnel that we're calling professional golf, and that we can see a path. And usually a major championship is a time where a lot of news is made and a lot of big decisions are made, because you're bringing a lot of the who's who in the game together, because it is a major championship week, and they come together earlier in the week to get business done, to talk about, you know, the ins and outs of what's going right and what's going wrong. And my hope is that they use this as an opportunity to take a big step in resolving things, or at least giving the fans hope that there is a solution in sight, or at least within the realm of possibilities. But as far as what transpires on the golf course, I'm going to be captivated watching Rahm and Scheffler.
Yeah, I kind of have the an in-between of your two answers there. I want to see how Rory plays. Because Rory was a guy who he had all this pressure on him leading into last year, and he crumbled. He missed the cut. And it was a terrible round. He was the favorite, I believe, last year, if I'm remembering correctly, to win it.
Yes, he was.
And didn't even make it to Saturday. And now that all of that pressure is kind of in the rearview mirror for him at this point, I want to see how he handles the a sort of pressure-free round. Or not, I shouldn't say pressure-free. Like, it is a major, but like, I guess less outside noise surrounding Rory McIlroy. And I feel like Rory's back in the good graces of the average golf fan, whereas he may have ruffled some feathers with some from a year ago, and then he goes out and misses the cut, and it was kind of a... It kind of felt like he was the butt of the LIV joke to a degree, and it was like all the LIV players that made the cut were pointing the finger at Rory, like, really? Like, you're going to talk all that smack, and then... You can't even make the cut at Augusta. Like, it's something that I want to see how Rory handles Augusta this time around.
And that is a great point, because I feel like we watched a certain maturation process of Rory as a professional. And I think it could come to fruition here. We could see one of the greatest, you know, events in watching him secure his Grand Slam. And I know how much it bothered him when Brooks got to five, and you know, he's stuck on it too. So I think there's another motivation there as well for Rory to do well. And, you know, but I think he's mentally in a place now that's in a good space. I think he is, you know, wired and ready to go to compete, not to compete and then have to face the all questions in the press room about everything outside the ropes, because that was wearing on him. And I think Rory showed that he's a human being like the rest of us. You know, he can do some remarkable things, but at the end of the day, the pressures and what was weighing on him, I mean, basically the whole tour was relying on him. And oh, by the way, you also got to go out and play some of the greatest golf you've ever played to compete with these guys. And, you know, there's only so much space up in our minds to do what we can do. And so I think by freeing this up and allowing him to just play and be Rory, I think is going to go a long, long way. Now, will he win? I don't know. But I expect him to be no doubt in the top 10 and potentially in the top five.
Yeah. All right. You got one more Masters question?
We always.
All right. Always. The Trivia Masters ready. Let's try Katie for a Masters Journal here. Hello, Katie. Good morning. Are you ready for your question?
Yeah, I am.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Okay, Katie, who was the first player ever to shoot a 63 at the Masters? Was it A, Nick Price, B, Greg Norman, or C, Arnold Palmer?
I'm going to have to go with Palmer.
Unfortunately, that is not correct.
You're stumping everyone today.
I got
today.
Everybody on this.
Thanks for trying, Katie.
We'll have a do another one here. Let's ask another one. Who's the oldest Masters champion? Is it Raymond Floyd, Jack Nicklaus, or Angel Cabrera?
Floyd.
Who?
Raymond Floyd.
Oh no! I'm sorry, it's not correct.
You got him
either.
Again.
It was Jack Nicklaus.
Oh, sorry, Katie.
You gave me the easy one that time.
Better luck next time. Thanks for playing
you.
With us.
Thank you.
All right, you're stumping everyone today.
I don't know what it is.
You made the trivia very difficult today. When we come back, we will get into a little bit of what's been going on around the PGA Tour. All that coming up next. This segment brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort, up north Michigan Golf without the drive.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.
Segment brought to you by Fox Bend Golf Course. Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan with you on the CDGA Golf Show. Let's get into what we saw last week at the Valspar Open, and it was a good finish.
It was a
down
great
the stretch
finish.
With Peter Malnati and yep. Cam Young. Peter Malnati, your champion after a 9-year drought without a win for him. He finally gets back in the win column there. And the close when you saw Cam Young kind of come out from, not the back of the pack, but he kind of came storming back with a chance to win. But it was Peter Malnati. Like, usually when you see those those guys with better track records on the tour start to climb up on Sundays, you see them overtake them, and I thought Cam Young was going to do it, but Peter Malnati did just enough to kind of hold them off and come away the champion at the Valspar.
No doubt. And let me tell you, Copperhead did not disappoint, as it always is. It's one of my favorite courses down in the Florida area. But really, March Madness Cinderella story, Peter Malnati. You know, a journeyman 9 years. I think they said it was like almost 4,000 days or something since mm-hmm. his last win, which was the 2015 Sanderson Championship. But to your point, he shoots 67, and he had to go through that snake pit, 16, 17, 18. And, you know, he hit some tremendous shots. The highlight of the whole day was the tee shot he hit at the par 3 17th hole. Knocks it to 6 feet, all while Cam Young's got the ball left of the fairway in amongst the trees, and he's trying to hook a 9-iron, and he could only get it to the right side of the green. He needed to make a birdie just to get this thing to go to a playoff, but instead, you know, Peter makes the putt at 17, makes casual par at 18, and wins the thing by 2 shots. But what I thought was really telling was after the round, how the emotions yeah. got to him in
and
a way.
With his son.
And he was with his sons. And for those who don't know, Peter Malnati plays a yellow Titleist golf ball. Now, most of the guys all play white golf balls, mm-hmm. and his is yellow, and the reason he does that is because when his son was 4 years old, he just loved that color golf ball, and he could always know where his dad's ball was versus yeah. the other guys. So I thought that was so charming, and he stuck with it. And, you know, and again, he just shows that he is such the family man and a guy that is so, so easy to root for. And another guy that, believe it or not, behind the scenes is very important in this whole PGA Tour Live situation, as he's on that committee, that council. Yeah. So, you know, here's a guy who is literally a behind the scenes journeyman doing all the right things and getting it done. And I couldn't be happier for the guy getting into the winner's circle. And I'm even more excited that he's having another great week, because it's going to be fun to see Peter Malnati at Augusta.
Yeah, no doubt about that. But yeah, I mean, it was a great finish there. You had some quality names near the top there, and it was cool to see a guy who hasn't won. That's always one of the more enjoyable things to see on the tour, is the guy, you don't need to see it every single tournament, but the guy who hasn't won in a long time, and they finally break through, kind of like what we saw out of Peter Malnati this past week. And yeah, the bucket hat too.
Oh,
on
yeah.
top of that, the bucket hat is back.
And you know what? I bet the sales of bucket hats are through the roof. And in fact, at the CDJ Golf Shop, mm-hmm. we have that exact Titleist yeah. bucket hat. So
that's awesome.
We had people ordering the bucket hat
because it was a hot seller this week.
But I have to also tell you, for those that are battling, you know, issues with skin cancer and whatnot, that is the best hat to have. It really is. But for some of us, it makes us look kind of weird, mm-hmm. but other people can get away with
just
wearing
embrace it.
I love the hat. It just looks so awful on me. And so that's why I wear the baseball hat.
Yep. 312-332-3776 if you want to join us. We will also give you an update of what's taking place at the Houston Open. And we've also got a little bit of a full swing recap as well before we go around the CDGA. This segment has been brought to you by Fox Bend Golf Course. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.